I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
With liberty and justice for all. Hello, Radio Jihadists. Welcome to our new home, Blog Talk Radio. We are exercising our First Amendment right of free speech. I'm Vito Esposito. I'm going to bring you an expanded show with live call-in. Call-in number is 347-857-1380. That's 347-857-1380. I'm joined tonight with Mr. Bob Allen.
Salami and lechem and cheese, my brother.
Salami and cheese to you, Bob. Jason Rabinowitz on the boards.
U. Esposito, how are you? I got one thing to say. Death to Islam.
Ooh, and we got that Mustang officer, Steve Kay.
Yeah, I love the sound of that. Death to Islam. America Akbar. Let's go get them, guys.
America Akbar to you too, Steve. How you doing?
Great. Hope
well,
you guys are doing good.
We are excited, man. We're on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to bring you an hour, hour and a half show. We're going to possibly do multiple days, so we're going to get off and running. You know, we talked on previous shows about Aifa Siddiqui, who demanded that no Jewish people be on the jury. She's making a mockery of the trial system in New York. She wants to have a genetic testing of each and every juror to make sure that they are not a Jew or a Zionist. As a result of making a mockery of the court system, you know, because she is a terrorist, an educated terrorist at that, found with 1 pound of sodium cyanide on her being, shot and struck a FBI agent in Afghanistan. And so as a result of her being making a mockery of our judicial system, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's trial, the infamous plotter of the 9/11 attacks, maybe moved out of New York. What do you think about that, guys?
Well, I tell you, if that happens, that would be great. In fact, it shouldn't even be a criminal trial. It should be held as a military tribunal.
I'm using this.
Are we at war, or are we going after 7-Eleven robbers?
Okay.
Exactly. Are we at war, or are we going after 7-Eleven robbers? I mean, you have Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who's admitted to being the mastermind behind 9/11. And now, under the Obama administration, they want to try this guy as basically a civil disobedient, just like Aifa Siddiqui. And what are they doing to our system, our judicial system? What about the impact to New York City? Do you really want Khalid Sheikh Mohammed with his two henchmen on trial in New York City? And they're going to spend upwards to, what, $250-300 million to hold this so-called trial, this escapade?
Look, Vito, let's turn this around. Let's just let's look at it a different way. That one mayor from that one city wants it there because it's going to bring in, you know, income. Well, let's set up souvenir stands, you know, have Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, you know, dolls, nooses around his neck, you know, whatever else we can sell. Let's make some money on it.
That's the mayor from Newburgh, New York. Who they spent $26 million on building a courthouse. So now they think that they can replenish that by having the courts in Newburgh, New York. Well, you know what? Then maybe you can keep Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his two boys over at the U.S. Army Academy, West Point. And then when you're done trying them, just march them out to the field in West Point and shoot them.
Sounds like a winner.
Yeah. I like Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10 of the Constitution a lot better. They're pirates. They sail on the seas or they sail in the friendly skies. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10 of the Constitution, proven through case law of the Constitution. Smith versus the United States. You take them and you kill them. You do not give them a trial. They're a history. But I do like the idea of the capitalism where you sell a trinket. So let's make some money.
Well, Steve, you bring up Article 1, Section 8.
Clause 10.
For our listeners, okay, just kind of educate in a just briefly. Let them know exactly. This is not something that you're pulling out of the air. This is not something that was only privy to 1777 or 1787. This is something that could pertain to what's happening today, especially when we have terrorists who are not in, they're in civilian clothes. They don't have any clothes of description or uniforms like that of the Nazi regime or that of even the Italians or the Mussolini. But you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, if I can read it to you, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10 of the United States Constitution says, quote, to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the law of nations. Now, when this was written, they didn't have airplanes, but it was the same thing. You had vessels on the water. Now we have vessels in the air. And the law of nations meant that was the law that was, well, that was the old United Nations that was basically Europe in those days. But what in World War II, this was adhered to, that if they engaged pirates, they killed them. Our United States Navy and Marine Corps killed pirates in World War II and before. Now we've gone to bowing down to international law, and we have the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff who thinks that international law surpasses the Constitution, and that's where our legal leaders are today, of both the Republicans and the Democrats, that they want to do these trials. And this is going on in, well, I don't want to get too complex, but it's Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10. You kill them. It's a very nice thing to do, because what do we got? 14 ships that are incarcerated by the pirates over in Somalia, and we have over 250 people, including the English couple?
Correct. Yeah, and the English couple, I believe they're still in captivity, and wasn't a ransom going to be paid from the British government on their behalf?
Probably, and you see, that just adds fuel to the fire. Instead of just killing them, that dissuades them from wanting to go out and capture more people. But if we pay them more money, now what's happening in Somalia is capitalism, as we were laughing earlier, that the richer warlords in Somalia are funding, investing like capitalists in the pirates, and when they capture the people and bring it back, then they divide up the spoils, and now they're having, like the mafia, murders of the warlords on who gets to split the invested capital.
Well, how much, in your opinion, Steve, how much of a factor was it that the Navy SEALs shot and killed the three terrorists who were keeping the captain of the Alabama hostage? And apparently, in doing so, it was over the President of the United States orders, who was trying to fly in FBI negotiators so we can negotiate again with terrorists and treat them like common criminals. So, I mean, how much of this is a reaction to our military leaders actually taking action in order to free American hostages?
Yeah, and that's a very soft response, just sending in a couple of professionals to do a hit job like that. The thing that works with the pirates is mass punishment or equal punishment. As soon as they see them getting, they should issue them an order. When you get within a kilometer, 1,000 meters of any of our vessels, we will open fire, we will kill you, we will destroy you, that's it. And then when a few hunks of wood go floating back to the shore, they'll stop investing in piracy, and the widows and the orphans will say, Daddy, the next group that wants to go out and do this, Daddy, don't do it. The United States will wipe you out, as we did in World War II in the Gulf, the Malaccan Straits. Remember, we were fighting over there in New Guinea and those areas. And so this is a very loving thing to do. It protects people from this stuff going on. Just sending out a team of very highly skilled professionals, the SEALs, it only kills one or two. You got to send a mass message to a mass number of people.
Well, I tell you, John Yoo of the Wall Street Journal, he wrote a piece that kind of summed it up pretty good. He said, and I quote, "The treatment of the 9/11 attacks as a criminal matter rather than as an act of war will cripple American efforts to fight terrorism. It is, in effect, a declaration that this nation is no longer at war." And that's huge.
Read that last part again. It means a declaration that this country is no longer at war?
Right. "The treatment of the 9/11 attacks as a criminal matter rather than as an act of war will cripple American efforts to fight terrorism. It is, in effect, a declaration that this nation is no longer at war."
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and it actually aids and abets Islam, because remember, our kids are getting killed in Iraq and Afghanistan because their constitutions are based on Islam. So by doing criminal trials over here, instead of just killing them, that aids and abets Islam, because that's how Islam spreads itself, is through violence. And so a proper use of restrained violence, which is what a declaration of war is all about in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10 of the Constitution, stops the Muslims dead in their tracks.
Right, and he goes on to say that prosecutors will be forced to reveal U.S. intelligence on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the methods and sources for acquiring its information, and his relationships to fellow al-Qaeda operatives. The information will enable al-Qaeda to drop plans and personnel whose covers are blown. It will enable it to detect our means of intelligence gathering and to push forward into areas we know nothing about. And this is the President of the United States and our Attorney General that are pushing this type of policy. And as you said, it is aiding and abetting the enemy. It's treasonous, in my opinion.
Well, why else would Sheikh Obama want to have Khalid Sheikh Mohammed tried in a civil court, knowing full well that CIA operatives and other types of sensitive information would be or could be disclosed in the trial? Eric Holder says no, it won't be, but that's crap. Why else would Khalid Sheikh Mohammed agree to having be put on trial after he pleaded guilty in front of the military?
Yeah, let's go back to Afia, our girlfriend Afia Siddiqui. Siddiqui, by the way, is Arabic for friend. Let's talk about Afia Siddiqui, who has a PhD in neuroscience. And then Major Hassan, the psychiatrist, the murderous psychiatrist down there in Fort Hood. So these guys are not poor, and they're not uneducated, and the flying imams and all of the educated people, the guy that murdered our CIA operatives in Afghanistan was a medical doctor, well paid. And let's bring that in with how they can take advantage of us being so silly as to go to a criminal trial instead of just exercising Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10. These people a part of the definition of a pirate is they act outside of the scope of a government. They don't have government backing. They're doing this just like a murderer would walk into your house or business with no authority from a state. That's why you have a declaration of war. That's the old law of nations, the old European law, which was a blanket amnesty to protect soldiers. So now we've got these pirates, which is Afia Siddiqui, Major Hassan, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, etc.
Well, how much then is CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Islamic Society of North America, who, by the way, the Islamic Society of North America, the head of that is Dalia Mogahed, who sits in the White House and is an advisor to Sheikh Obama on Islamic affairs. So how much of an influence is an organization like CARE influencing the decision so that we don't offend the Muslims?
Well, that's part of it, is we're not declaring war on fundamentalist Islam. I think that Obama and ex-President Bush, for that matter, that they were afraid to declare who our enemy is. And our enemy, in my opinion, is fundamentalist Islam, the ideology that is causing the act of terrorism. You cannot have a war on terrorism because it is just an act.
Good point. Good point.
Great point. It's a great point. That's why nobody squealed on Major Hassan. All of our kids were terrified of political correctness, and Admiral Mullen, once again, who doesn't know what to do with pirates, is the guy who's putting a squeeze on 8 of our soldiers because they were too afraid, intimidated by the Pentagon, as I experienced firsthand in the Marine Corps, to go out and identify terrorists like Major Hassan.
Well, now they have, what, 8? Officials or 8
officers,
Army
officers.
That are going to be up on investigation at Fort Hood for not reporting on Nidal Hassan. Yet it was out there. I mean, he was very blatant. He was overt about his religion, his religious practices, and his belief. And then who was it that had access to his emails? And he was conversing with al-Awlaki in Yemen.
Yeah, classical catch-22. When I was getting paid $500 an hour, let me repeat that. When I was getting paid $500 an hour, ladies and gentlemen, I was being paid $500 an hour by the United States Marine Corps training Marines going over to Iraq, and I was fired because I squealed. I told the truth about Mohammed and Islam, and I was pulled out and the colonel, full colonel, who fired me, said, the Pentagon has commanded me that I have to be politically correct, and you will say nothing disparaging against Islam or Muhammad. So the eight kids, officers, down at Fort Hood knew if they told the truth, they would lose their job. Well, now, since they didn't tell the truth, they sat on their hands for fear they would have their careers destroyed. Their careers are going to be destroyed anyhow.
Right.
Well,
I got a
question
22.
For you.
Go ahead.
I got a question for you. What is when they gave you the parameters that you will say nothing disparaging about Islam, yet everything that you were trying to tell the soldiers was actually the truth based on the text of the Quran and Hadith. So how do you define how did your CO define disparaging material?
Yeah, he wanted Mr. Rogers, can't we all just get along in the neighborhood? Islam is good, everybody is good. Islam has nothing at all to do with suicide bombing, cutting off heads like the guy that cut off his wife's head there at Bridges, or, you know, like Chris Matthews screams and yells, religion had nothing to do with it, even though Major Hassan was screaming Allah Akbar, and when they blew my son up, when a suicide bomber blew up my son, he was yelling Allah Akbar when he blew up himself too. So yeah, this is the kind of insanity that our kids, now we got 18,000 more kids getting shipped over to Afghanistan, and the rules of engagement are absolutely insane. So this stuff runs deep. It's deeper than cap and trade. It's deeper than Obamacare, healthcare. It's deeper because these terrorist networks are everywhere on every military base. They're in every major city. They're on every major college campus. And these guys, there's at least a million of them here in the United States, and at least 10% of them are ready to go out and blow themselves up sometime in the next 10 years or so.
So basically your commanding officer wanted you to lie.
Yes, that is true.
Or omit information.
That's lying. That's the technical definition. You can lie by omission or omission. That was lying through omission, and I refused to do it, and I told them, keep your $500, and I'll go out and walk the streets or something.
Because yeah, when I'm talking to folks, I get these questions on the most basic level.
Thank
who
you.
Who are we
Thank
fighting?
You. Love them horses.
Who are we fighting? Who is our enemy? And our government's not telling us. Steve, they were paying you to tell our soldiers that, and yet they wanted you to lie.
Yeah, well, basic battle planning, there's two very important parts to battle planning. Number one, everybody knows, know your enemy. But number two is more important. Number two is know your friendlies. So what I was telling the kids basically was you cannot trust any Muslim. If you do, you're going to get killed. And I have proof positive. That's what saved my son's life just before he was blown up. He was cagey enough, smart enough. He was like playing tag for life. The suicide bomber kept following him and everywhere. And my kid was getting himself and all of his friends away from the suicide bomber. And when my son told his officers in charge that they were infiltrated by Al-Qaeda and this guy was a suicide bomber, they threatened to arrest my son, but he disobeyed their orders and he was able to save all but one guy. One of the officers was blown to hamburger. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so how do we, I mean, our job is to get the message out. How can we get our message out in a way that people understand it, other than telling the truth? We are fighting fundamentalist Islam. It is a political ideology.
The best communicator of Islam is the Muslims themselves. When they go Muslim, Afia Siddiqui, Hassan, the underwear bomber, Muhammad Atta, all the rest. And I'm going to shut up for a while. I'm talking too much.
No, actually you're not. And the Muslim Brotherhood, as we discussed before, is the top of the food chain. That's the godfather. If you look at Islam as a criminal element like the mafia, the Muslim Brotherhood, they formed CARE. They formed the Muslim Student Association. They formed the Islamic Society in North America. And what they said at the Holy Land Foundation terrorist financing trial back in September of 2007, they found a Muslim Brotherhood strategic memo that was entered into evidence that states, and I quote, "The Ikhwan or Muslim Brotherhood must understand that all their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging their miserable house. And that says to me that the Muslim Brotherhood is to win the hearts and minds of the American people and then destroy us. God, it makes my head want to explode.
You remember about 6 months ago or so, we actually did a show on Most Favored Nation and aiding and abetting Muslim Brotherhood. For example, I was brought in as a material witness in Los Angeles a couple of years ago to help one of my friends to get, you know, asylum in the United States. And I was shocked because I saw members of the Muslim Brotherhood in trials before me, and sitting out in the hallway was members of the Muslim Brotherhood, the Ikhwan, and I knew who they were. I had Arabic-speaking people with me who were identifying these guys, and I saw how the judge gave them favored treatment and allowed them to stay in the United States. It's catch-22 again. In Egypt, because the Muslim Brotherhood, they murdered Anwar Sadat, they've murdered so many people that they are outlawed in Egypt. Well, by our law, if another nation is harassing other people, they are allowed to come into the United States and get asylum. So it doesn't matter that our law is silent when it comes to, but the reason they're fleeing Egypt is, for the being harassed is because they're murdering the leaders of Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood. So I've seen it firsthand in Los Angeles deportation trials. They get special kid gloves.
You know, I don't want to change the subject. I want to keep on that. But we have a young man by the name of Tony who's on the line who's going to be going into the military, and he has a question for you, Steve. And I think it'd be a great thing for him to ask you.
You betcha. Hi, Tony. How you doing, big guy?
Hi, Tony.
I'm good. Hey, I'm good. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing great. Thank you for joining us this evening. I know you have a question for Steve, or a question. You're entering the military, huh?
Yeah. Army.
Great.
Good. Excellent.
God bless you.
I know. I'm happy about it.
Good.
But I want to know why this country has become politically correct in the first time that in ever.
So your question is you want to know why the United States has become politically correct?
Yes, against everyone else.
That's a great question. I don't know how that's going to help you in the Army, but it's a great question. I've run for politics, and I know when I ran from politics, I was not selected to run for higher level, and it was amazing. The reason they told me I could not run for higher level was I knew the Constitution so well that scared people, and the other one was I was a white man, a successful white man. And so that seems, bringing in women and people of color seems to get more votes than white men. So once again, watching Scott Brown and some of the other stuff, Sarah Palin, et cetera, it's how they get people elected. And soon that gets us into trouble because instead of being colorblind and going on meritocracy, you start doing like Sonia Sotomayor, you begin adjudicating based on sex and skin. Sonia Sotomayor makes her decisions in the Supreme Court based on people's, whether they're male or female, or whether they're dark or light. So, yeah, always follow the money and the power in there. But I will change gears on you. When you go into the Army, you're going to see some interesting things, and I can tell you you're going to do a great job. And I would just plead with you that you trust no Muslim. It's going to be an interesting tightrope for you when you go, and hopefully I hope you never get shot at and you never have to get into battle. But like my son, the thing that kept him alive was he did not trust any Muslim.
I believe you on that. I actually got a little prepared because I watched the video that you guys gave me called Homegrown Jihad.
Ah, yes. Well, great. And you should be prepared for it. You know, Steve Kay has got a wealth of knowledge, retired Marine Corps. His son's been in the military. And, you know, we are certainly not anti-military by any means. And we respect and admire what you're doing and what you're about to do. But just be diligent over there. And as Steve Kay says, trust no Muslim, because that's who we're fighting. They have a different belief than we do. Their belief is in the Quran. They do not acknowledge man-made law. They have no regard for our democracy or our democratic way of life. They can be nice now, but once you get into that majority where you're surrounded by a majority of Muslims, it's Sharia law that is the optimum law, and it's Sharia law that takes precedent over everything else. And so just be safe and be diligent. And thank you for the call.
No problem, guys.
Best of luck to you, Tony.
All right, stay safe, Tony.
No, he
fill us in when you find out.
He brings up a great point. One of the other things that kept my kid alive was I said, son, if they capture you, they're going to cut your head off. That's Islam. So I told him, you either die fighting or you kill them. And that kept my son alive, too. So, Tony, God bless you. Don't let them take you prisoner. If they do, they will cut your head off, period.
That's funny you say that, Steve, because, you know, we don't hear much about the U.S. prisoners or U.S. Army or U.S. military man being taken prisoner. We talk about the prisoners that we Islam going to Guantanamo Bay, or we're going to try them in New York. But I don't ever remember a war where there's been absolutely no American prisoners taken. There's been one missing here and one missing there in Afghanistan. But what is the penalty under Islam if they find an enemy combatant? They don't put them on civil trial, do they?
Well, they hold them for a while, and they always have a video camera. And that was the other thing that tipped off my kid. When he saw the video camera, he knew they were going to do something because they always videograph it and put it on the Internet. So that was about the last straw and forced him to disobey his officers and get him out. And he knew he had listened to you and me and others break through the multiculturalism and the silliness, the diversity and the kumbaya, and can't we all get along? And he'd been to Bosnia and he'd been to Afghanistan. He actually shot to death a number of the Iraqi police, so-called allies, coming in to kill him and his men. So for Tony, just know, and all of our kids that go over to Afghanistan and Iraq, if they get captured, they will be beheaded.
Well, Steve, let me read something from the Noble Quran, Surah 489, and this is out of the book by Mark Gabriel, Islam and Terrorism. Mark Gabriel, an Egyptian imam, taught at Al-Aqsa University, a professor, actually, a lecturer. This is what he writes. He interpreted into English the Noble Quran, and it says, "Those who reject Islam must be killed. If they turn back from Islam, take hold of them and kill them wherever you find them." So it's really simple. You capture an American soldier, you put him on tape for a couple of days, and then you behead him, a la Nicholas Berg. Daniel Pearl, the same thing. I mean, this is absolutely insane that we are going to be conducting a civil trial in New York City for a terrorist by the name of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And I think maybe Sheikh Obama and his administration is starting to feel the pressure from the American people who are saying enough's enough.
Amen to that.
I'll tell you, I guess Aifa Siddiqui is the one that really brings everything to light. Here's another terrorist who was caught on the grounds of Afghanistan, who should have been tried by the military tribunal in Afghanistan and then summarily pranced out to the compound, an American compound, or even bring her back to the green zone in Iraq and then shoot her because she was there to do harm to the United States of America. Here she has a PhD from Brandeis University. She goes to MIT and gets a doctorate there, and she's caught with sodium cyanide, 2 pounds in her pocket, along with plans to blow up Wall Street and or the Statue of Liberty. I mean,
she was a big player in the network that's on every military base wherever we have Muslim soldiers, Marines, sailors, airmen, Coast Guard. They're all networking together through silence or actively commissioned and out there spreading, working with mom and pop, grocery stores and convenience stores, gas stations, hotels around every one of our military bases in the United States, the Fort Dix Six. We've got the, and those were Albanian, remember, those were Albanian Muslims, the same guys who were inside of Sergeant R's compound in Iraq when they blew up 22 of his friends. So all of these networks, Afia Siddiqui, Hassan, the BV bomber, the USS Cole, these gigantic cells are all throughout the United States, Mexico, Canada, and this is the stuff that is going to actually help radio jihad grow and grow. The Muslims are our best PR people to get people to open up their eyes, and they're going to start looking for radio jihad. I've got hundreds of thousands of people hitting my crusade radio now. It's really fascinating to see how people are, you know, 300 million people here. There's a lot. They're starting to figure out these guys are dangerous.
Well, speaking of PR, do we have Andrew Whitehead on with us?
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Whitehead. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. We have Andrew Whitehead of anticare-.net, right?
Well, actually, it's Ant.
Oops.
I'm just trying to search. Just search it on Yahoo. Search Anticare on Yahoo. That's the fastest way.
Well, Mr. White has had the distinction of being sued by CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations. He's an American activist, and he's director of the anticare-net.org website, www.anticare-net.org. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Very welcome. I'm glad to be here.
You've had an interesting go about since starting your website, Anticare. I guess the Council on American Islamic Relations, that other fine Muslim civil rights organization, took exception to your website.
Yes, they did. They actually sent me a cease and desist order, and we actually shut the website down for 2 or 3 days while we decided what to do, because it's privately funded by myself and a few friends. And we didn't have an attorney at the time, and I was kind of confused. But in the end, we decided to publish the letter on the net and expose their threat to silence us. And at that time, we had all kinds of offers from attorneys to defend us pro bono. And that's when we went with Greenberg Traurig out of Washington.
Great organization. Large.
Second largest law firm in the world, is my understanding.
So, well,
we had a lot of horsepower.
Andrew, 9/11 had an impact on your starting the Anticare website. How did you come about with the Council on American Islamic Relations? What was it that caused you to start a website called Anticare?
It's when I discovered that they had a link on their website linking to the Holy Land Foundation that was supposedly going to benefit the firefighters and the EMTs and the police officers who first responded to the attacks, and I just thought that was really curious. And the more reading I did, the more angry I became. But I also had a friend I had served with in Iceland in the service. He was burned to death in the 9/11 attacks, and that was an added catalyst.
Sorry to hear that. That's terrible.
It is.
Well, what should Americans know about CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations?
Well, we've proven time and time again, and not just us, a lot of other people, Dr. Daniel Pipe, Steve Emerson, I mean, the list goes on and on and on, Robert Spencer, have proven CARE's ties to Hamas, its ties to groups such as MSA, ICNA, and that whole alphabet soup that you were mentioning earlier.
Mm-hmm.
CARE's tied to them. They share directors, they share members, it's, you know, the whole thing. They do have a plan. It is a long-term plan, which is one of the reasons they're so successful at it, and it has an ultimate goal, and they're fixed on it like a laser beam. And that gives them a lot of advantages over us. As you know, Americans have a very short attention span. We have what they call news cycles. Well, radical Muslims don't think that way. When I think of next week, they're thinking next century. And that's just their way of thinking. And it's been that way since Islam was founded. And I want to make something clear. I am not anti-Islam.
Mm-hmm.
What you worship or how you worship is between you and your God. And I don't even want to discuss religion. My fight is with radical Islamists. Those are the ones I am angry with. I know a lot of Muslims in this country that hate the radical Islamists probably more than I do, because they've had to live with them, they've had to listen to them, and they got thrown out of their countries by them because they just couldn't live with their barbarity. So I think it's a mistake in the United States, particularly because the way our country's made up, to attack all of Islam. I think we're making a mistake. Because as you said earlier, I think someone did, said earlier, We need these people on our side. And nobody understands a Muslim better than another Muslim.
Well, I have a question for you. You know the cast of characters at the Council on American Islamic Relations, particularly the co-founder, Omar Ahmad. He has quoted...
Oh, hold on a second. Hold on a second. I got to take this call. 602, go.
Your assistance is needed at the receiving gate.
Well, Mr. Omar Ahmad is the co-founder of CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, along with Nihad Awad. Both of these gentlemen, and I use that term loosely, started the Council on American Islamic Relations. Of course, the funding of the Council on American Islamic Relations is kind of skeptical. We have our ideas that possibly the Saudi Arabians are behind the financing of this organization, along with the Bob. They've had a couple of fundraisers, one in Orlando that we know of in October of 2007, which we got kicked out of, where they raised over $300,000.
Very close to that. The Muslim American Society raised that for Hamas with right here on American soil, folks. This is in an Orlando, Florida mosque. So think about that. There's people that were flying under the radar. The event was not advertised anywhere in Orlando. And they were raising money for a terrorist organization. This is happening right in our soil. So my question is, well, how do you define the radical Islamist? What is a radical Islamist? I think that everyone that was there that gave money is a radical Islamist.
Well,
I might have...
I disagree with you because, like I said before, I know a lot of Muslims who hate these people even more than you do, more than I do, and they've seen it.
Okay.
And then one of them, and I'll give you an example, Dr. Trudy Jasser of the American Islamic Foundation for Democracy.
I'm familiar with him.
You should visit his website.
I have.
And he's he's just like those doctors, or he was one of those doctors, except he was in the Navy, that you spoke about earlier. Those medical doctors, that group of eight involved in the Hassan case, who have been threatened with some kind of retaliation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, no,
so how would you
if I were, well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go on, I'm sorry.
Well,
if I were one of those, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to ask a question about Omar Ahmad. So for our audience, since we're on the CARE issue and you have the anti-CARE website, one quote that we use a lot and thank you, Omar Ahmad, Islam is not in America to be equal, but to become dominant. The Quran, the Muslim book of scripture, should be the highest authority in America, and Islam the only accepted religion on earth. Now, that's his belief, and then they start the Council on American Islamic Relations, and they tout themselves as being the largest civil rights group for Muslims, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of quirky things start happening inside the United States, like the six imams on the U.S. Airlines and some other events.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think this is a radical statement by a supposed peaceful organization?
Very radical, and I don't support it at all, and there's no excuse for it. But you have to understand, he's not speaking for all Muslims. He's speaking for himself.
That.
Yeah. So I think it's a mistake to go after all of Islam for the action of one person. Or the statements of one person. No matter how
much you
disagree with
CARE, CARE being a front group for the Islamic Society in North America, for the Muslim Brotherhood and for Hamas.
I agree
and then
with you.
You have you also know about Ahmed Badir. This guy starts up an organization called United Voices for America. I mean, that sounds like a really nice organization. I mean, it sounds like a peaceful organization. And he stands on the Capitol steps in Florida, in Tallahassee last year, and Bob and I were standing on the other side of the courtyard, and he says, we have just instilled fear into the hearts of the legislators. What does that mean? So what
again, you're talking about one person. Yeah. You have to do what I do. I went after CARE because it was a single group. I knew it would be easy to marginalize them because every time they open their mouth, they shoot themselves in the foot. And other people can do that with other organizations, such as MAS or MAS and all the other ones. They just haven't done it yet. And what's needed is a concerted effort. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Do you have any idea where their funding is coming from?
Where the what?
Where CARE's funding comes from? Is there any idea as to where they might get their funding?
Sure, we found connections to the Saudi Development Bank. We did a story on it, I think, 2 years ago. Yeah. It doesn't matter where they get the funding from. To me, that's not the key issue. The key issue is who's on our side and who isn't.
Okay, how do you
determine, this is Bobby.
Mr. Whitehead, how do you determine who's on our side and who's not?
Well, I'm going to, if someone comes to me and says, I'm going to cut your neck head off, to me, that's an enemy. And I do know that in large segments of the Muslim population, they ascribe to the theory that you can lie in order to advance your cause. I completely understand that, okay?
Okay.
However, there are people in the state, in the states, within the Muslim community, who are adept at figuring out who these people are. And these are the people we need to be talking to. Did you know there's over 23 different versions of the Quran? Did you know that?
Well, I know that there's different translators. Yusuf Ali is the most recognized.
Right. What does that tell you? It tells you that it's not a monolithic faith. It tells you that people have their own opinions. And there are people in the Muslim community who are free to speak their own mind, and they do speak their own mind. And these are the people that we should be cultivating, not wasting our time getting hyperventilated over people such as Awad and Hooper and the rest of them. They aren't worth the effort, and they don't represent Islam in the United States any more than I do. Oh, hold on a second. I'm sorry. I got a call. I'll be right back.
No.
So it looks like we've got a little bit of a difference of opinion here in this very interesting discussion. How do you define a moderate Muslim or a good Muslim to a Muslim who adheres to the Quran and Hadith?
Well, there's not many Sunni Jassers that come on board to take on Islam because of the fear that's being instilled. And if more Islamists or more Muslims would stand up and say, we're not going to tolerate this type of behavior, then maybe we would be on a different course. But certainly the government under Sheikh Obama has succumbed to the political correctness and multiculturalism. And Tony, if you're still listening, there's also a multiculturalistic issue here as well.
Yeah. Well, it seems like we lost Mr. Whitehead, but I'm going to tell you something that I just vehemently disagree with Mr. Whitehead, and I appreciate him coming on. But I've spoken to Zudi Jasser. And Zudi Jasser, for the folks who don't know, he is a doctor. He was ex-military, a lieutenant colonel, I believe, high-ranking officer, doctor.
Lieutenant commander.
Very well-respected. Yep, in the Navy. And his deal is that he wants to take all the bad parts of the Quran, that's all the verses that Vito read earlier amongst the hundreds more, he wants to take them out of the Quran or change them. But under Islamic law, it's blasphemy for him to do that, even think about it.
And the Zudi Jasser, that's absolutely insane. And sorry, it goes back, with all due respect to Mr. Whitehead, and you noticed I got silent. He was your guest, and that's fine. With all due respect to Mr. Whitehead, he does not understand Islam. He understands care, but he does not understand 14 centuries of Islam. And if he's silly enough to go out there and trust, then he will get blown up. Eventually, they'll play him for the fool. So,
I still find it very interesting, though, that I think Omar Ahmad is the problem. Nihad Awad is the problem.
Good Muslims.
They also have the ear of our congressmen, of our senators, and they have the ear of the President of the United States. And if the President of the United States is making and formulating policy as a result of these so-called Muslim front organizations, Islamist front organizations, there's a problem there because political correctness has succumbed to military. Now, I know that that Sheikh Obama was not in the presidency at the time of the undertaking of the wars, but you still have people that are inside the military, i.e. Hesham Islam, who is appointed by Gordon England, who has been within the military along with Defense Secretary Robert Gates for the last, 6 years maybe now?
At least, actively aiding and abetting the terrorists come in. Hey, let me flip something just for a second. Zudi Jasser, it's interesting. Zudi Jasser is listened to by all of our talking heads, but none of the Muslim leadership listens to Zudi Jasser. They all laugh him off.
Well, Yeah, because he's a blasphemer.
Well, he's a blasphemer. I think he's working for them. He's a silly man at best, and at worst, he is leading our leaders and our talking heads astray. He comes on Laura Ingraham and the different Glenn Beck type shows and comes on like he's a moderate. I don't believe in that. And once again, Islam is its own best PR guy. And as the cells unfold and unwind, like the people, the French Resistance, et cetera, it'll be interesting to see how Mr. Jasser comes in the next 30 or 40 years.
So do you think he's a useful, Jasser is a useful idiot, or does he
think that he may
believe exactly what he's doing?
Exactly. And so how can we, epistemologically, how we know, how can we prove the future? So to come in and to use him as the poster boy of being a moderate, et cetera, is to say that, with all due respect to Mr. Whitehead, he does not understand the depth of the depravity of 14 centuries of history of Islam.
Interesting.
Well, I also wanted him to expand a little bit more on Ahmed Badir. I've got a problem with him, too. And I think we all
think
should.
We got to move on to something bigger, like the terrorist cells around the United States, et cetera. God bless Andy that he survived carrying and exposed them. But if that point of view that he's taking in battle planning, that'll get you killed big time.
Well, I got to tell you, though, Andy was very successful. He was the first person that CAIR went after.
With
he
CAIR.
Took him down. He confronted him. And the tactic that he used is that during discovery, he said, CAIR, I want you to open your books. I want to see what is there. And then CAIR went running for the hills.
That is
well,
true.
And he should be applauded for that. And more and more people need to stand up to CAIR. And like you said, he's funded this website by himself. It's a privately funded website. And it's nice that he stood up and he was not intimidated by the fear that they tried to instill in him.
Right.
Right.
So, General Patton or a General Eisenhower, if you don't have a full picture of the paradigm of your enemy, which is Islam, all Muslims work together silently or actively, aiding and abetting, helping all of these terrorist cells throughout the United States, then you're just going to torpedo all of the efforts of taking down one small segment of Islam is CAIR. CAIR in the long run is insignificant. The Ummah, the body of believers, that is significant.
Well, explain what that is a little bit. I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't know what the Ummah is.
Right. The Ummah is the body, the global body of Muslim believers. So when you hear Anjem, and if you have a clip with Anjem Chaudhary, say that all Muslims are innocent and he will always stand with his Muslim brothers and they can kill you and me, the Ummah, the body of Muslim believers. What is a Muslim? Either he does what Muhammad would do, or he would adhere to Sharia law. And if anybody calls themselves a Muslim, then they've got to either model their life after Muhammad, the original ultimate terrorist, or they've got to be working to bring in Sharia law. So when we look at Zuhdi Jasser, and he thinks he is going to reform the Quran, that is absolutely silly. And for a guy, a medical doctor, to do that, there's got to be more to that picture than meets the eye.
Well, Steve,
yeah,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Bob. For the definition, Ummah is Arabic or the word meaning for community or nation. It's commonly used to mean either a collective nation or a state, to give you an idea. And when you hear the word the Ummah, they're talking about the entire Arab world in the context of Islam. The word Ummah is used to mean diaspora or community of the believers, Ummat al-Mu'minin. And this is the whole Muslim world. So it doesn't matter what country you're from. If you are Muslim, you are technically part of the Ummah, whether you are Shia or Sunni or any of the sects. And that's how I understand it.
Right, and that gets to the silliness of us once again, as you started out the show saying that we're fighting terrorism. We're not fighting terrorism. Islam declared war against the entire world 14 centuries ago. And so if we think that we're silly enough to conquer the Taliban or Al-Qaeda in Pakistan or in Afghanistan or Iraq, that means that we do not understand the enemy. The Ummah is global, and the Ummah works under the Dawa, D-A-W-A, and their job is to destroy us, period. And that is working throughout the whole Ummah. In addition to that, we've got proof positive that 80% of the mosques in the United States are funded by Saudi Arabia, and they have their hate-filled ideology, and it is very important who funds us. Always follow the money. In battle planning and finding the cells, you always follow the money. Now, there was some other remarks that were made, well, who cares who funds them? Well, frankly, as a battle planner, I better know who's funding them because they're the enemy.
Exactly.
Right.
And who is funding the Council on American Islamic Relations? Who's funding the Islamic Society of North America? Who's funding the Muslim Brotherhood? It's all ties back to our petrodollars. The profits there gained by Saudi Arabia are funding organizations to undermine the United States of America and other Western democracies.
So,
yeah,
you know
what I think,
frightening stuff.
Yeah, and you know what I think scares people? Because when I talk with my father, who's very liberal, and we talk about this occasionally, and he comes back and says, well, you hate all Muslims. You want to fight every single Muslim as a target. And I think that that's what scares a lot of people, and that's really not the case. As individuals, Muslims are fine. Muslims are like everybody else. But you can fight, you can be a terrorist without using bombs or bullets. People have the narrow, in my opinion, people have the narrow viewpoint that unless you got a bomb strapped to you or in your underwear flying on a plane, that is the definition of a terrorist. But what Vito was talking about when they were raising funds for Hamas here at the Goldenrod Mosque here in Orlando, they raised hundreds of thousands of dollars. They were aiding and abetting the terrorists with their money. They were doing financial jihad because they knew exactly where that money was going.
Absolutely. They knew what George Galloway was here for. George Galloway has been around the world pimping himself out to organizations like Hamas, supporting Hamas, and also to mosques within the United States. They know exactly what George Galloway stands for. They know exactly what the Imam Musiri in Orlando stands for. They know exactly what Siraj Wahaj stands for, the Brooklyn
right.
Imam, who's a radical Imam who goes around the United States and gives speeches for care, raising hundreds of thousands of dollars. Siraj Wahaj hates America. Siraj Wahaj hates the fact that we are a capitalistic society. So people know what money they're giving to. You and I know we give to the Boys Club, to the Girls Club, to any other type of organization to feed the hungry, feed the homeless. We know what that money's going for.
Right. So what we'd like to see is for our government to go after these groups, to go after the George Galloways, to go after CARE, to go after the Muslim American Society, like they've been going after with the Holy Land Foundation trial or shutting down those Iranian mosques. That's what we need. We need them to shut down the 35 training camps of Sheikh Jalani. Why those are still open and not registered as a terrorist organization is where the problem is.
I think we have Mr. Whitehead back on. We got disconnected. I think he's back on. Hold on a second. I believe...
Okay.
Hello.
Let me get him.
Andrew, are you back?
Yes, I am. And I got called away.
No problem. Sorry we got disconnected.
We appreciate you being on during work. Our listeners are very happy to hear your point of view. And even though we might have a little bit of disagreement, it's good. I think this is a very good conversation.
Consider this. We're in the United States, and we can say whatever we want without fear of having our head cut off. I think that's a great thing.
That is what makes us. That's what makes us great, is that we can actually have this conversation. We're in Saudi Arabia. If we were having this conversation, we would be over in Chop Chop Square.
Amen.
Andrew, we understand that when CARE came after you, you went after CARE's financial records, and during the discovery phase of the trial, CARE suddenly dropped their lawsuit. What was that about?
Well, CARE protested their demands made by my attorney on my behalf, Reed Rubenstein. He wanted more detailed records on their background, their associations, and all that of all their key personnel. And in addition, he wanted to know exactly how they were funded. Well, we already knew most of the information. What we were looking for was confirmation. The problem is CARE knew that we already had most of the information. So we were basically sending them a signal, look, you're not going to win this case. We were fully confident we were going to win it from the beginning. I mean, it's a slam dunk. In my mind, it is, anyway. And once CARE started seeing the questions and they protested, and each time they protested, we would go back to court and the judge would tell CARE to produce the documents. It finally got to the point where the judge says, look, you have to produce them. And CARE said, well, we can't, you know, without losing the case. So they dropped it and ran away from it.
They can't produce financial documents without losing the case. Well,
right.
I wonder what they were trying to hide.
Ask them.
I'm sure. Money.
So in essence, the judge, this is Steve the Mustang out here. So in essence, the judge was saying the people who fund you are dangerous or the people who fund you are important? Or what was he saying, Andy?
The judge was saying you have to produce the documents because you don't have a legitimate reason not to produce them.
But my question is, why wouldn't CARE respond?
They couldn't. They couldn't admit the truth. They
why?
Can't admit where they get, because they've been years saying that they don't get money from overseas governments.
Oh, so it is important who was funding them, because
right.
When they follow the money, they could find out who the terrorists were?
Well, not only would they find out the terrorists, it would give them an idea of how the money is being spent. And how you spend your money is equally as important as where it comes from.
So it was very material that they
right.
didn't want to disclose that Saudi Arabia was their funder?
Well, not only Saudi Arabia, there's other countries involved as well.
But
I remember in Saudi Arabia, they have over 1,000 princes that are related to the royal house of Saud. And so when someone tells you...
But at the end of the day, they were hiding that as a giant cell, as all cells do. They were hiding who was funding them, because if people knew who was funding them, they would be concerned that there were terrorists involved?
Well, if you tell me how you spend your money, I can tell you who you are and what you believe in. And if I found
right.
out if you were supporting the skinheads or the Nazi party, I think that would give me kind of a clue into your, you know, your personal mindset, wouldn't it?
So earlier you said it didn't matter that the Saudi Arabians funded them. Now you're saying it did matter?
It did matter in my case. The reason I'm saying it doesn't matter now is because it's settled. We know where the money's coming from. We have a very good idea.
And I misunderstood. It does matter. Thank you very much. It does matter who's funding the suicide bombers, who's funding killing our fit kids, who's funding the mosques. It does matter in that. It just didn't matter at this time because your case is over. Am I understanding you now?
That's more or less the essence of it, but let me get to the real heart of the matter.
That is the essence. That is the essence of it, and Zudi Jasser and the rest of these guys are involved in that.
Okay, but you got to understand something about CARE. CARE is different from most other organizations, such as the MSA and the MAF, INSA, and the rest of them. CARE is a media creation. It was sent here to pave the way for Islamic theocracy. And they're mainly involved in publicizing how sweet and nice radical Islam is. The way to cut CARE off is not necessarily the money, because another group will take its place tomorrow. Okay? The way to cut off a group like CARE is to cut off its media access. And the reason it has media access in this country is because the American people have not stood up and said enough is enough. Not enough Americans have stood up and said enough is enough.
That's a great point, because now I see Bill O'Reilly has had Doug Hooper on from CARE a couple of times or as a regular guest, and I guess he must think that Doug is a moderate Muslim.
Well, he said some really nice things about Hooper, which I find perplexing, but then I remember that CARE does have a large stake that's owned by the Saudis. Or not CARE, I'm sorry, but Fox Network.
Yeah, 5%, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And
always follow the money.
Exactly so.
Always follow the money.
Cutting off the media outlet is a good way to start removing CARE from the mainstream.
Well, people need to write. I write letters, emails, and I tell them. I write to Fox, NBC, and all the rest of them. And why do you talk to CARE? And I give them names like Zudi Jasser. If you want to talk to real American Muslims, I can give you a whole list of people to talk to. You don't have to talk to CARE. CARE represents less than 0.1% of the Muslim population in this country. They're nothing. They are absolutely nothing without the media. I'm serious. If they were a 7-Eleven, they'd be out of business.
They're a huge leader in the global terrorist network, though, in obfuscating and making everybody looking good, aren't they?
They're very good at it, and that's what even makes me more angry, is when I look
well,
at
even
the
though they're so small, even though they're so small, they're extremely important. Like, you only have a few generals in the entire military, just a few, but those few direct and set policy, and they divert, and they send out people to do tasks, and CARE is doing all of that through the media. So CARE is extremely important in the 1 million or more Muslim terrorist network throughout the United States.
That's true, but the reason they have their legitimacy is because we give it to them. When we put
like
them on
President
TV.
Bush,
and they,
yeah, President Bush and the Republican Party and Grover Norquist and all those guys?
When I found out that Grover Norquist was on board with this despicable organization, and I can't think of another, I can think of worse names to call him. When he went on board with this, I was shocked. I'm not going to lie to you.
Can you tell the audience who Grover Norquist is?
Well, he started out as a tax freedom fighter.
Right.
And I thought he was a conservative, and then a few years ago, I don't know what happened. His train went off the track.
He was on the board of directors for the National Rifle Association, and we understand that the Saudi Arabians funneling cash through him are getting millions of dollars to all of the elected Republican officials throughout the United States.
Well, like you said, follow the money.
So he's just one man. So once again, he's involved with CARE and the power. I've run for political office. Some of us we all understand in political science 101, the Achilles heel of any constitutional republic is foreign intrigue, because everybody has to run for office. And showing up, we have the helpmate of Newt Gingrich, Grover Norquist. Norquist wrote the Contract of America, and he's working actively with the Saudi Arabians and funneling cash out to the Republican parties. Now we got the Secretary of Defense, who is Secretary under the Republicans and the Democrats, who accepted $600 million from Qatar, the rogue terrorist funneling, laundering of global terrorist money throughout the world. And he's in there burying our kids in Afghanistan and Iraq who are fighting for Islam, bringing it back money. And Tony calling in yesterday, that's very important stuff.
Okay, let me ask you a question, okay? And
you can
make
ask me anything you want.
I love you for that. Why
now, remember my son. Well, remember, my son was blown up by a suicide bomber, and I work with kids coming back. I work with kids coming back with metal all through them. I do not tolerate it. I was paid $500 an hour by the Marine Corps to teach tactics. I was fired because I refused to lie. I don't tolerate it. You don't tolerate it. PO Jihad doesn't tolerate it. And we should certainly not tolerate CARE or Saudi Arabia funneling this money through the Republican Party and the Democrats both. That's a very good question.
What's your question, Mr. Whitehead?
I'm sorry?
Go ahead. What's your question?
Okay, my point is this. I'm sure you guys know your military history, so I'm not going to go back to and give anybody a short course on history. But can you imagine if in World War II, there was an organization in Washington, D.C. that was called the American Nazi Friendship Society. In your wildest nightmares, can you imagine that?
Sure, it was called the Bund.
I'm sorry?
It was called the Bund, that we chased them down and arrested them all.
Yeah, but they had the common decency to fold up when the war started. They pretty much folded up on their own.
That is absolutely not true. The Bund had to be hunted down by the FBI, arrested, and thrown into prison.
I'm talking about the majority of the ordinary members. I'm not talking about the leadership.
Well, the leadership are the important ones. Once again, we come back to the very few, like generals. So, Andy, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
The point I'm trying to make is this. If a group like the Bund had existed during World War II...
They did exist.
They did. Do you not think that the majority of Americans would have risen up, as we did after Pearl Harbor, and if the government didn't take action... Don't you think citizen groups would have? And yes, I'm talking about possible anarchy.
But I would not, if I was living in those times and I knew there was a Boone organization or an American-Japanese Friendship Association down the street, and I found out it was still operating and it was putting out propaganda in favor of the Imperial Army or the Nazi government, I think I would have taken offense to that, and I think I would have participated in a program to get rid of it.
Well, you're a good patriot. You would have done that, and I did that. I worked with a number of people, and we turned them into the FBI and to the CIA, and the FBI and the CIA blew us off.
Well, and I think that's where he's going with about CARE, and that's the issue with CARE. CARE is a front organization who's out there, is out in the forefront, and now, you know, they're getting time on Fox News, they're getting time in front of the President of the United States, and they should be run out of town. Am I correct?
And this is my final point. And I know you say don't trust Muslims and stuff, okay? I have a problem with trusting Muslims. I'm not going to lie to you, okay? But something we have to understand. The fact is there's over 1 billion Muslims on this planet. And absent them suddenly mysteriously disappearing overnight, which we know is not going to happen, we have a choice, okay? We can work with the moderates among them. And there are moderates, trust me. But a lot of them don't want to come out because of groups like CARE. CARE is taking people such as yourselves to a degree, and to myself at first, especially after 9/11. And what they're trying to do is make us look at all Muslims as being terrorists. And what that does is when a peaceful Muslim, like Dr. Jasser or any of the others, comes forward, no one trusts them. And CARE is very successful. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, 14 centuries, hey, Andy, 14 centuries ago, Islam declared war against the whole world. People say to me, well, Steve, you want to fight all the Muslims? I don't have to. They're all fighting us. 14 centuries ago, all Muslims, if they follow Muhammad, which is what a Muslim is, if they follow Muhammad, then they are actively working either to kill us or to work to kill us. And to take the point of view that we can work with Zuhdi, Jasser, etc., is to go against battle planning 101, know your enemy, know your friendlies. This giant cell of Islam goes back 14 centuries. And CARE is part of it. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Andrew. Go ahead and finish your point.
Okay. The point is we're not going to win this war if we fight it for 1,000 years, if we don't accept the fact that there are many Muslims on our side. If I was in charge of the military, first of all, I'd get generals in there like George Patton, General Blackjack Pershing. I would bring back admirals.
Realistic. All of our leaders today are politically correct. All of our leaders today are politically correct. Patton is gone. Andy, to bring up and exhume dead people who won't come back is to miss the point. We're fighting against an enemy that is destroying us and buying off our politicians. So to make things like that are inaccurate, I congratulate you for fighting CARE, but I have to discourage you from misleading it. You said earlier that you don't trust Muslims. Now you're backpedaling.
No, I didn't say...
Yes, you did.
No, I wish I was sitting down face to face with you because I don't speak well on the radio. I don't speak well on the radio.
You should find another medium. Perhaps you should find another medium.
Andrew, you're doing a point.
That's the reason I don't do a lot of radio interviews. Okay, I'm not a good public speaker on radio shows.
You're doing fine.
Okay. But I've talked to a lot of Muslims, and some of them have written me privately and told me, look, we don't support CARE, but we're afraid to speak up because we know if we do, we'll be attacked by CARE.
And that's a great point. The point that we hear a lot is that they're afraid to speak up because they're afraid of the ramifications. They're afraid of being ostracized from their community. And that is a big issue. And more and more Muslims, if they are indeed moderate Muslims who truly denounce this type of activity, terrorist activity, especially here in the United States, they do need to stand up. You know, we have an article of what happened up in Detroit where
my point is this: we're allowing CARE to define what a Muslim is. Why? We're talking about a group with maybe five top leaders and a couple of secretaries that operates out of a very small building in Washington, D.C., which they have to rent out most of it because they can't even make the damn payments on it.
Right.
And we're saying to them, oh, you represent every single Muslim in the United States.
I'm a Protestant.
Unfortunately,
Let me tell you, what's to stop me from opening an office and calling up Fox News and telling Fox News I speak for every Protestant in the United States? Do you think they're going to come over to my office, knock on my door, and ask me for an opinion? No, they're going to tell me to go to hell.
Well, correct. The part you make,
and rightly so.
That follows into your point is that the moderates that you know personally, that they are very shy about speaking out because they do get maligned because of groups like CARE. So let's explore.
They come from countries where their family members have had their heads cut off. They come from countries where they've had family members have their heads cut off. I mean, they've lived Islam. That's why I'm saying we got to understand. I know it is, and that's why they're here. They don't have to worry about someone knocking on their door in the middle of the night and chopping their head off. That's why they come here. They want the same thing you do. They want to go to the mosque. They want to worship in peace, and they don't have to worry about their head being cut off because somebody doesn't like what they say or how they prayed or whatever.
Is that going to happen to them here in America if they speak out against Islam or radical
Islam? It will if we allow them to take over this country. You can bet it will. They'll be the first to go.
Well,
they're hated more than
the moderates disappear then. All the moderates disappear then, right?
Right. But Andy,
they
never were moderates.
Moderate be at the front of the line.
I believe they would be.
That's what I want to see. I want to see these moderates stand up against these radical Islamists.
But how can they stand up when the United States government, half the Congress, half the House of Representatives, is essentially kissing CARES behind? They're looking at these people and saying, who's going to protect me? Half the Congress is recognizing the people who want to kill me or the people who want to oppress me. I mean, would you speak up in that environment? You might, but
identified
a lot of people
the problem. We've identified the problem, so what's the solution in your point of view?
The solution is to shut down CARE and every single organization that's close to it and to do it under anti-terrorism law. The laws exist.
The best way
we're just
to do
not
that, ladies and gentlemen, is to join anti-CARE. Go to Andrew Whitehead's website and join up. Get on his newsletter and educate yourself.
And also,
we're
going to
win this battle.
Congressman. Also, contact your congressmen and your senators and let them know about this because, you know, the other part of it is that you have Keith Ellison, congressman from Minnesota, who sits on the board of CARE, who legitimizes the organization. As far as I know,
he's not a board member, but he might as well be.
Exactly.
I don't think he is an official board member, at least not on paper.
His ex officio is what he is.
Yeah, that's an excellent word. Excellent work.
Go ahead, Bob. It's nice to say that we should shut these groups down. We're in total agreement with you, Andy, but how do we go about doing it? You've done battle with CARE and kicked their butt.
First of all, I would clean out the Department of Justice. And I would get some people in there that understand what it is to be an American. And when I say what it is to be an American, the kind of people who served in the Justice Department during America's last great wars, World War I, World War II, the Korean War, that kind of thing. People with that mindset who think America first, not the ones who want to run out there with a policeman's Miranda sticker and read everybody they see their rights. Some people are not entitled to rights. The Constitution says nothing about terrorists because terrorists are recognized nowhere in the world. Neither are pirates. When you see them, you kill them. Case closed.
Bingo.
You don't need a military trial. You don't have to provide these individuals with attorneys and food and all this other nonsense. You pump them for information, and then you get rid of them.
That's exactly what we were talking about at the beginning of the show.
Right, but we got to be careful. We don't lump all Muslims in there. CARE is very good at getting Americans mad at Muslims. That fits into their plan. Okay? Let's not fall for that. Let's not let them speak for all of Islam. We have to stop that. And stop giving them so much power.
We're the voice for the moderate Muslims then, I guess, huh?
I'm the voice for all Americans who understand that this country's worth fighting for. But we're not going to do it if we villainize an entire religion. We can't do it. It's just not going to work. And all we're going to do is create enemies where we don't have them. Say, for instance, you were a Protestant, and someone started the Catholic Inquisition again. How would you feel?
Well, if the Protestants start putting bombs on, strapping bombs to them and blowing themselves up, I'm right.
Okay.
I just put them at the front of my plate.
Okay, there you go. I mean, those are extreme examples. We know they're not going to happen. We do know it is happening today in the Muslim community. But who better to keep an eye on a Muslim than another Muslim?
But they're afraid. That's the whole thing. That's what I want to understand.
But we can,
your Muslim friends are afraid to speak up.
We can make them unafraid if we take on organizations like CARE and the Muslim Students Association and the ICNA and the rest of them, and if we put them out of business. We can demonstrate to them, yes, they were here, but now they're gone, and we're not going to tolerate them anymore. We recognize they don't speak for Islam. They speak only for themselves or their particular branch of Islam.
Well,
and
we
can do that.
Moderate Muslims, we need these moderate Muslims to speak up. And actually,
they will.
Their silence by consent. Their silence, they are consenting to that activity.
No, they are scared. They are scared. I don't like bank robbers, but I don't go around saying every day, I hate bank robbers.
Yeah, but if you see one and you got a gun in a bank, you're going to shoot them if you got the opportunity.
Right, but we don't have people running around the United States blowing up buildings.
You know who's the bravest ex-moderate Muslim? Is Rifka Berry.
I put her in my top five.
Yeah. Now, she's an ex-Muslim because she saw the evils of Muslim and Islam and left.
Okay, but see, now your point, you're adopting CARE's line. She chose Christ because it was a personal choice. And I'm so happy we live in a country where people can do that. You can worship a pile of rocks in your backyard if you want, and no one's going to bother you. No one cares. Okay?
Except Islam.
Right. But she just as easily could have said, I don't go with the same type of Islam that my family does.
Okay.
I am still a Muslim, but I'm not a Muslim that believes in whatever her parents do. I don't know what branch of Islam her family comes from. I don't. So I'm not going to speak to that. Okay.
Okay, it really doesn't matter, but for
Sharia it does in a way because. Okay, go ahead.
Here's an important point, if you can give me a second.
Uh-huh.
In Sharia law, it states in Umdat al-Salik, The Reliance of the Traveler, page 595, when a person who has reached puberty and is sane voluntarily apostatizes, which is leaving Islam, he deserves to be killed. Now, that is something
mm-hmm.
that everybody should be able to believe in because we have freedom of religion here in America. Now, I want to see all these moderate – I want to see Zudi Jasser and all these other moderate Muslims stand up and scream, form groups themselves to say that this is not – this is wrong and this needs to be removed. It needs to be stopped here.
Let me give you a suggestion, okay? Because
yeah.
I don't speak for Dr. Jasser. Give him or send him an email. He's a very nice guy. I've spoken to him.
I have, too.
Have you had him on your show yet?
My questions.
I'm sorry?
No. He would not answer my questions. But I asked him point blank. I said, how can you follow in Islam? And I quoted that verse. I said, how can you follow in Islam, still call yourself a Muslim, where that is a doctrine of Islam? I would leave it
hold
in
on a second. I have to take this call. Alan?
All right. We've got about 11 minutes left.
There you go.
So thank you very much for being on the air.
How much request did you give him a call on a cell phone?
10-4, 2 minutes, thank you. And I'm 10-8. Okay.
Awesome.
I'm sorry, I had to answer a radio call.
That's okay. We have
I'll
about
tell you
10
what.
Minutes so we want
to. Hey, Alan, Alan, I have to get back to work. Would you do me a big favor?
Certainly.
And I promise I will not let this drop. Send me an email, and any questions you have for Dr. Jasser, put him in there, and I will write to him, and I'll ask him if he would please consider talking to you or responding to your email. Would that be fair?
That would be great. We'd actually love to have him on the show.
Well, I'll even suggest that. Now, can I give him your number?
Absolutely. I'll send you an email.
Okay, that way I won't forget.
Great.
Like I said, I'm sorry. I'd love to stay with you, but I have to get back to work. We have more calls.
We appreciate your time.
Well, no, I appreciate you giving me a chance.
Thank you so much, guys.
Huh?
Thank you for coming on, and we appreciate your efforts in taking on CARE, and I think it was a bold move on your part, and thanks for not stepping down and being intimidated. So,
we're all in this together. Let's not forget that. Okay?
Yes, sir.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
calling.
Wow, so what did you think of that, Vito? Hey, Vito. Hello? Well, I tell you, that was a very, very interesting phone call. And we got some dead air here. Made it all the way to the end. So if anybody's listening, that was a very interesting discussion with Andrew Whitehead. And the reason that it was so interesting is that we were discussing the idea of moderate Muslims. My point with Andrew, which we probably agreed but in different levels, is that I want to see these moderate Muslims. I want to see them rise up against these so-called radicals, against the groups like CARE that Mr. Whitehead was talking about. But they are silent. And the reason they're silent is because, as Mr. Whitehead said, they are afraid. Now, what are they afraid of? That's what I wanted to try and get an answer from, but he was distracted, and I'll give you the answer. These moderate Muslims, or these Muslims who just want to live their life, they're afraid because they will be killed.
Yeah, Bob.
Don't you agree?
I agree wholeheartedly. I think you bring up a great point, and I just find it it's very hard to take in some ways, because it's the moderate Muslims who are silent on this whole issue, and that's the problem. If they were more overt in their condemnation of these terroristic attacks, if they were more overt with Aifa Siddiqui, who's demanding that genetic testing be done at her trial so that no Jews serve on her as jurors, that's a racist comment. And if moderate Muslims don't have a problem with that, they need to start speaking out.
That was my big concern with Mr. Whitehead, and that's what I think was getting Mustang so upset. It was that contradiction. He was trying to make that contradiction glaring for him so he could see it, but it didn't. I don't think it happened. But like you, I want to see these people that are silent, I want to see them speak up. And it's
well,
so
you know,
important.
I think it's funny that we're all on the same page. That's the funny thing. You know, he has a problem with Grover Norquist. He has a problem with Saudi Arabia funding CARE. Well, Saudi Arabia happens to be the problem in this whole Islamic movement inside the United States and the Western democracies. They are funding 80% of the mosques. They are funding CARE. They're funding organizations like Hamas. They're throwing money at the media outlets here. You know, all these subversive groups who are trying to undermine the Western democracy. But cash is talk. You know, and that's what bothers me the most at this whole thing. Cash is talk, and you have people that are compromising their own beings, their own ways, and their own mentality in order to take the cash so they can, because they're not making, well, they're not making anything, like Steve said. You know, you're making 50 G's serving in the military as a captain, and then all of a sudden you're getting, you know, $600,000 thrown at you by a Saudi Arabian company. Well, heck, man. I think that's pretty damn good. I mean, why should I serve in the military for $50,000 and I can make as a consultant, I'm being paid $300,000 or $400,000 from a Saudi-backed organization? And that's what CARE is. CARE is funneling, getting money funneled through it by the Saudi Arabians. We Americans who are putting gas in our car every day, so those profits from the petrodollars are going back to Saudi Arabia, who is funding organizations like the Council on American Islamic Relations, Islamic Society of North America. And the sad part of it is organizations like the Islamic Society of North America have the ear of the President of the United States. And all these tentacles, when they start spreading out, they all go back to one source. The head of these tentacles are the Saudi Arabians.
Bingo. That's the godfather. It's like
that's the
RICO.
Godfather.
It's a criminal group.
You know, and we have the ability. If somebody had the gonads, we have the ability to shut down an organization like CARE. I mean, when you have the co-founder of CARE, Omar Ahmad, saying that Islam is not in America to be equal but to become dominant, you have that's a bit of a subversive statement, a bit of a subversive group. That's a means to undermine the United States of America. It's a means to undermine the United States Constitution. Because we all know that the doctrine that they're following is Sharia law.
And that's where Noni Darwish nailed it. She says Sharia law is Islam and Islam is Sharia law. And that's where Mr. Whitehead was probably disagree with that.
Well, Bob, you bring up a great point. There's another Islamic, former Islamic individual, or maybe she is still practicing Islam, but there's an individual who grew up under Islamic law, left Islamic law, who's probably the greatest voice for moderation and or for saying that Islam does not belong in America. It's Noni Darwish.
Right, and she's a former Muslim, and you can check out their site at formermuslimsunited.org. And that's who I think that Whitehead and Zudi Jasser need to have on board. Because I don't believe Zudi Jasser.
But will she go on board? I mean, Noni Darwish is a sharp individual. She does. She sees right through Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that she can. She would trust anybody who believes that Islam should still be part of America. Because the intent. Well, because the expressed intent is to undermine the United States Constitution.
That's right. That would be like trying to find a good Nazi during World War II. And trying to work with a good Nazi, a moderate Nazi.
Well, they were all good Nazis.
Right. And these are all good Muslims who are blowing themselves up and trying to destroy our miserable house from within.
Ah, it sounds like Al Moody.
Yes, that's why we exist. That's why we're here. I mean, listeners, if you think that we want to be here and invest our time and money into this show, the answer to that is no. I wish there wasn't a need for us to be here, but there is, and we've got to speak out, and we are. Thank you very much.
Play Fun Misses and Weddings every Saturday night.
Well, somebody's got to do it.
That's exactly right, because we have seen, let's put it this way. If you take a look at what's happened in Europe, and just go out and read a book by Bruce Bauer, Bawer, called While Europe Slept, and you see the advances that Islam has made inside of Europe, Norway, Denmark, and the greatest advancement that has been done has been into the United Kingdom, particularly England. They have bent over backwards to make them feel like they're equal. And what have they done? They've demanded more and more and more, and now it's gotten totally out of hand because you had that politically correct multicultural attitude to make them all equal.
That's
so
right.
With
they're
that,
not in these... Oh, I'm sorry.
We have about a minute left, so go ahead, Bob.
No, all you. Finish her up.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining ACT Radio Jihad this evening. Join us again next Tuesday evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at www.blogtalkradio.com. Visit our website, www.radiojihad.org, and donate to keep ACT Radio Jihad on the air. We do appreciate you following us to Blog Talk Radio. We are excited to bring you a one-hour show. We're looking to expand that to a couple of more days. So follow us on our website. Access Blog Talk Radio from our website. That's blogtalkradio.com. God bless our troops, and God bless America. Bob, you got anything else to add?
I just want to take a line from Mustang Officer Steve Klein and say, America Akbar, America's greatest.
You're damn straight, America's greatest, because we are exercising our First Amendment right of free speech, and we are going to continue to broadcast every Tuesday night from 7 to 8:30. Radio, striving to educate America.
Hey.
Hey.
Whoa.
That was interesting, huh?
That was. Steve got all upset. He hung up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? I hope he didn't take offense with it, but, you know, just wanted him basically to give the guy a, you know, let him talk a little bit and maybe ask questions from that, but...
He was rude. He was rude. I got to send Whitehead an apology email.
Yeah, you know, that's why I cut in a couple of times, but I should have cut in more, and I'm glad you cut in as well. And then I cut myself off because I wanted to shut him down a little bit, and then I cut me off.
Well, we're learning it.
But
that hour and a half went by really fast.
Man, it did. How the hell did we only do an hour? A half hour last for the last year.
I don't know. I mean, that went really, really good. And what happened to Dan? Dan was there for a minute and then he was gone.
Yeah, he was there, and we had that. I noticed a different number on there, and that's when I went to Tony.
Yeah.
I took the call because Dan was gone.
I wish fucking unreliable. It's like I was counting on him to be there for the caller because that other woman called, and I had to get off the air, and you had to go monologue.
Well, yeah, and you know what? When I saw that you were scripting, you put the yellow on the screen because that was a cue to me to continue talking. So and the same with you. I think you probably saw that I was offline as well.
Yeah. Well, that chick called, and she said, I love Mustang. Where can I get a book? Has he written anything? I want to read it.
That's probably his wife.
I don't know. I don't
well,
know.
Well, he was that. I think, and I hope he doesn't take offense to this, but he got combative in there, and he should not have. We don't need somebody to be combative. And I know that Andrew struck a chord, but... You know, with all due respect, we had to ask him more about what was happening with CARE and his organization, and that's where we should have channeled it. It was kind of nice to get an expanded thing, but I think you should have kind of tempered it a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, Whitehead was contradicting himself so much. He was starting with the PC line, and then all of a sudden he got like us for a minute, and then
right.
He went back to the Zooty Jasser. And it was driving me nuts. It was driving Steve nuts. And Steve says, look, you know, you can't talk this shit on this show, and I'm going to go after you. And he did. And it was good radio, I think.
Well, I liked it. But
yeah.
I thought I would have preferred to have Andrew ask some more questions, or ask Andrew some more questions. Personally, I'm not a fan of Zooty Jasser. I don't trust the bastard, but,
yeah,
you know, and I understand where Steve was coming from as well. I mean, I really do. But
right.
It was just something that was not right about it.
No, and where I found his weak link that I was trying to go after is he's saying, you know, all the stuff with the government changing. I was like, that's not going to change. That's just words. That's not going to happen. But the moderate Muslims, they can speak up. There's nobody stopping them.
That's correct.
That's where I was trying to get. That's where I was trying to get with him. Going, well, you got all these moderate Muslim friends. Get them to speak up. And he goes, well, they can't because they're afraid. And I'm like, what? They're afraid to speak up in America? And I wanted him to. I wanted him to expand on that. Why are they afraid? Tell me why they're afraid. I want to know exactly why they are afraid and what they're afraid of. That's what I wanted to find out. And my guess is that he would have answered, well, they're afraid of other Muslims that are going to hurt them here in America or their families back wherever they came from.
But Al,
and that's the problem with Islam.
Yeah, but Al, that was also the reason why we needed to have Steve temper himself in order to have,
Whitehead answer some of those questions, you know, putting him on the spot, we found, I mean, we did find a lot of contradiction, and I wanted to see him stay on the line so that we could absolutely put him on the spot and continue to put him on the spot. But, you know, and I know Steve didn't like the answers, but we have to listen to some of these answers, and we take them with a grain of salt, without a doubt. We don't buy the hook, line, and sinker, but we certainly needed to let him finish his point. And it shows the absurdity and how some of these people think in the absolutely incorrect way.
Right. So you and I get that. You and I understand. We understand that, and we're able to do it politely and then ask that question, that stinging question that they're not going to have an answer for, and not do it in a rude and combative way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're acquiescing to the guy's logic. I mean, I don't think we're not succumbing to his way of his thought process. I think even our listeners are going to sit there, scratch their head, going, "What did this guy just say?"
Right.
You know, so I do believe that we probably, that Steve should have probably tempered his way about him, but you know. And we certainly want him on the phone, but it did make for good radio because he was just jumping down the throat.
And it did, and it showed that, you know, you can come on our show as a guest, and if you say something that's absolutely insane, we're going to challenge you on it.
And that was insane.
Yeah, I can't believe this guy. I thought he would be hardcore because they went after him with both barrels. They tried to destroy the man.
Yeah, well, and how can you say that there's a difference between what Kerr did and Islam? There is no freaking difference. I mean, it's, you know what? Let me call you back on your cell, and we can stop paying for long distance phone here.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, call me back on the 7055 number.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay. All right. Bye.
All right. Bye. We just hang up, right?
Call me back on the home phone.
So, I mean, do we just hang up? Is that all we
do?
We're done, right?
Yep. We just hang up. Okay. Bye.